Welcome to Inside Analog Photo. I'm your host, Scott Shepard. The Inside Analog Photo radio program is all about the traditional photographic process. We talk about all aspects of analog photography, including the hybrid workflow. You can find out more information over at www.insideanalogphoto.com. And of course, Inside Analog Photo is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful. These guys have the coolest instant photography materials known to mankind. They have, of course, the pack film in 3.25 by 4.25 and 4x5, color and black and white. They have the Instax systems in the wide format, the Instax 210 camera and film, and of course the Instax Mini in the Instax Mini 7 and the Instax Mini 25, both in color film. Beautiful stuff. There's nothing cooler than instant photography. You get a print, because if you don't have a print, you don't have a real photograph. This is great fun stuff. This is great for art. This is great for business. This is cool stuff. You definitely want to check them out over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends over at Photo Publicist, providing worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development for the photographer, turning photographers into celebrities. You can find out more information over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the highest quality work known to mankind anywhere on this planet. Unbelievable developing, scanning, and of course, output on high quality Fuji Crystal Archive. Unbelievable cool stuff these guys are up to. And remember, you don't have a photograph unless you have a print in your hand, and you need to print your pictures. This is important. You need to supply proofs to your customers and even print your own work, because it's not about looking at it on a monitor. It's about holding a print in your hand. Definitely check these guys out at Richard Photo Lab, of course, at richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5. DR5 Chrome Black and White Developing, that turns your black and white neg into, that's right, black and white chrome. Unbelievable stuff. www.dr5.com. Our friends over at Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com for the camera strap that will not slip off your shoulder, guaranteed bar none, the coolest strap around. Our friends at Iger Studios for the finest quality drum scans known to mankind, igerstudios.com. Our official media partner, APUG, the Analog Photography User Group, for all things traditional photographic process on the web, www.apug.org. And our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, over at www.eastmanhouse.org. Today on Inside Analog Photo radio program, we're going to have with us Michael Costello. Michael is a photographer around southern New Hampshire, and he's doing all kinds of great things with nature photography, doing great black and white work, prints, commercial work, installations in colleges, and a lot of great stuff. And of course, using and loving the analog process. Michael, how are you doing today?
Never better. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us here on Inside Analog Photography. Great to feature you today on the program to talk about your beautiful nature photography and all this cool stuff that you're up to. So, Michael, tell us about yourself to start with here, and then we'll dig in a little deeper.
Well, I'm in southern New Hampshire, and most of my work is done in northern New England, mostly Maine and New Hampshire, a little bit of Vermont, and basically taking a look at landscape photography in places where you don't have sweeping vistas. So a lot of forest work, waterfalls, some beach work, that sort of thing. I tend to do mostly 4x5 as far as format, although I do have some smaller format cameras that I still use, but I fell in love with the 4x5 and tend to continue to use that, even though it's pretty expensive to shoot.
But you can't complain about the quality from a good 4x5.
No, can't complain. And there's still labs in this area, so you can get E6 run and get it back in a couple hours, which is still pretty nice.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a bummer with E6. It's dying off quick, and be able to have some local labs that can process some large format chrome is unbelievable, because there's nothing like looking at large format chrome on a light table.
That's certainly true. And a lot of my business aspect of what I do is making prints. And customers that I tend to work with are usually looking for sizable prints. And when you make prints from 35 and then make similar prints from 4x5, oh, they're so much nicer. Sharpness is there and the richness of the colors. It's just, they're beautiful.
So do you typically tend to shoot for yourself? Do you tend to shoot for clients? Is your photography as a business focal point doing the prints really is the main thing?
Well, right. I mean, basically, it's all specs. So I put together my inventories of images, and my customers basically give me their specifications. So size and finish, A lot of the work that I've been doing, I work with interior designers that put stuff into colleges, universities, things like that. So I finished a job at Dartmouth College not long ago, and they specified they want a block-mounted style, and pictures are laminated and things like that. So everything's done custom. So I shoot for myself, and they then choose what I've got, and we make custom prints from that.
Very, very cool. So how did you get into photography? What brought you in to want to make pictures and do prints and all the stuff that you're up to?
Well, my father was always interested in photography and all 35mm stuff. He never got into doing his own developing or printing or anything like that. So I was always around it, but it never had anything more than like a 110 when I was a little kid. Then after I got married, I picked up my first 35mm SLR and started playing with it. But it really wasn't until I got to New Hampshire and started spending a lot more time hiking and outdoors that I got into it. And I went from 35 to a TLR and started doing some medium format stuff. And as I learned more and read more about it, primarily with the black and white that you could do yourself, and I started getting interested in the larger formats, and then eventually I borrowed a 4x5 and started playing with that and said, okay, this is what I need to do. And eventually I got my own and built up the lens collection, and it just takes years because stuff's expensive. If you're looking for something in particular, the used markets are the place to be.
Very, very true. Now, do you typically like to shoot more color than black and white? Are you sticking more with black and white because you're printing in black and white now, or what's your preference in shooting?
I love black and white. The dynamic range of the film is great. I tend to sell more color. I was out this weekend, and every image that I took in black and white, I also did an E6 shot as well, so I've got variation. Printing from the black and white is really a lot of fun for me. I have a dark room at home, and I spend a lot of time down there making prints. All the color stuff goes from scans, so it's something for me to have fun with, and color just does tend to sell a little bit better. So I do both.
Now, you had the thought of printing your own color, or are you still doing the black and white gig pretty much?
Well, since all of my color stuff is E6...
Pretty hard to print.
It's hard to print, and
right.
I think availability of the papers and things like that are difficult. I have a very good relationship with a lab in the greater Boston area, and they actually use a Durst Lambda system, which uses lasers to expose traditional color paper. So you get a real C print out of it, even when you start with digital input. So it's nice. I can't complain.
Well, I really think any more that if you're going to shoot color, either it be chrome or color neg or whatever, that you need to be immersed in this hybrid workflow. Otherwise, you're going to be left with a difficult path or trying to make cibachromes or something of the sort. Ilfachromes, whatever you want to call it today. Yeah. The hybrid situation is a needed thing, and I think that you still have the unique look of film and all the qualities that you're going to want when shooting analog, but you can get something that you can actually have made.
Absolutely. There's a gallery that the lab that I'm with down there has, and they've printed a bunch of stuff and all the black and whites they've done on the Lambda, and they're just beautiful.
Then, too, like you said, you did the deal for the college, so let's talk about this installation that went in and how all this was done up.
Well, I work with interior designers, and so they basically spec out what they want, and I print them out for them. I did two jobs for Dartmouth College. A couple of years ago, they built a new visiting faculty apartment complex, and we went in and did all the artwork on the second floor, which basically that's where the visiting faculty are. There's a third floor stuff that wasn't faculty. They were pretty happy with that. We actually had to come back and do another one because the incoming college president wanted to move in, but they didn't have all the rooms done, and so we did another one for them. And then last year, there was a big renovation of Buchanan Hall in the Tuck Business School up there, and that was like 23 apartments and then lobbies and seminar faculty rooms and things like that, and it was a pretty big job.
That's a lot of prints, more than people think.
Well, the people who actually paid for them were very happy with them, and that was the good thing. I keep in touch with the people up there, and they've had a lot of good public comments about the project in general, but the photography in specific, so I've been very happy to hear that it was well-received.
Now, do you find that you've had good luck working with commercial interior design people that would deal with an installation like you did? Let's say a photographer wants to get some work in somewhere. What's your thoughts on how people go about this? Because you've seen they had pretty good luck in your local area with getting these installations and these kind of commissions.
Yeah, it's not easy. Number one, those projects are fewer and farther between. I mean, for certain, they don't happen as often as I'd like them to. But getting in with the designer, basically, it's a trust. You're dealing with a lot of prints and a fair amount of money. I mean, that they're trusting you to turn over for buildings worth of artwork. And I do all the installations and everything as well. And I think that's helpful. I mean, I have a crew that I hire, and we go in and wrap it up in a day. And how to get in? Gosh, I wish I knew exactly how I got in. I mean, I got kind of lucky, and I think that has something to do with it.
I always wonder when you go on trips and you see all this art in hotels, it's like, wow, wouldn't it be great to nab a big hotel gig?
I know another guy who does similar work, but he tends to work with sort of national chains. And the numbers that they're paying him were a lot less than the numbers that I was getting. So I think there's sort of a point where it gets too big and the numbers just don't work out. We talked briefly about numbers, and I said, I don't think I could make that work. I work with a lab that is not cheap. They do exquisite work. It's all completely custom. Their equipment was very expensive, and they've been in the Boston area for 40 years. I mean, I could probably have found a cheaper printer and probably found a cheaper framer and things like that. But there's a point at which you get what you pay for, and I'm trying to make sure that we can meet budgets on the client's end, but get the quality that they expect as well.
And you still got to make money, too.
That's right. And lucky to do that now.
So let's talk about gear here. Talking that you're liking to shoot more large format, what are you shooting with on the 4x5? Tell me about what you're using for gear.
I have a Toyo 45C monorail.
Yep.
So yes, I haul the monorail out around in the woods and the forests and things like that, and it's a little bit on the big side, but it works.
So let's chat about that here real quick. So, you know, a lot of people getting in a large format or want to get in a large format think that they need to buy some kind of field camera, some wood gig, something that folds up. You're proving that you can go out with a monorail, and monorails you can pick up very inexpensively off of eBay these days.
You can, indeed. I have an old Bogan 3021, fairly heavy tripod with the 3047, the old three-way pan-tilt head, and it just has the octagonal quick releases, and I just basically, when I'm at the car, throw it on, throw it over my shoulder, and off I go. And it's not awful. Now, I mean, I do a lot of photography with people who are shooting digital SLRs and travel very, very light. There's a funny story. After going out several weekends, this one other guy, having seen me actually take a shot with the 4x5, he tells me that he's nicknaming my camera Spot because all I ever do is take it for a walk. So,
well, I mean, just because you take the camera doesn't mean you have to take a picture.
Well, that's exactly right. I've been shooting quick loads for color, so you're looking at about $6.50 every time you trip the shutter just to get the film back from the lab. If it's not right, don't take it. And that's really the way that I look at things. So I've gone out and shot with people where they've taken hundreds of pictures in an afternoon, where I took two, and I was completely happy with what I did. And they kind of shake their head, but you put all this work into getting here. Yes, I did, but I mean, if it's not right, I'm not going to take it. And that's just my philosophy.
Well, I think people, too, when they go out to do these kinds of gigs, they sort of almost need to pre-run. Go out to where you're thinking where there's something cool and take a 35 and just play around and look to see if it's worthy of breaking out the gear.
Yep. A lot of times, if I'm scoping out a new area, so you look out on the map and say, this looks like it's promising, I may not even take a camera at all outside of my iPhone camera. And I will go and make notes. What did I see? Where was the light? When would be an ideal time to be here? And then in my notebook, I'll have, this is a perfect shot for fog. And so in the fall, when the dew point comes way up, the temperatures get cool at night, I know that this is a place that I want to be to get that shot that I had in mind when I got there. So I do a lot of scouting and scoping, and sometimes I don't take the gear. I want to focus on seeing and not necessarily get caught up in getting this one shot right now because there's so much more to see. If you got a 30 or 40 acre forest or something, then you need to be able to get through it and get tied up with getting one shot. Because setting up one shot can take 15 or 20 minutes if it takes that. So.
And with the use of the monorail, have you found that to be any hindrance at all or actually better than using a field camera?
I've never used a field camera, so I don't know that I can make that comparison.
And you're shooting only 4x5 or you're shooting 8x10 as well?
I actually, well, take a second to note the passing of Peter Gowland, who you may or may not recall the name.
I knew Peter personally.
Okay, I was very sad to hear his passing. Peter built a custom 8x10 for me last year.
Wow.
In all honesty, it's probably the last camera that he ever made because Alice, his wife, was telling him to get out of the business. So he was able to put something together for me, and it's a piece that I'll treasure. I don't take the 8x10 out into the field. I need a Sherpa to carry the film holders.
Right.
It's just too big. Actually, the 8x10 weighs less than my 4x5. The 4x5 is 9 pounds. The 8x10 with a 300mm lens on it is only 7. So he built me a great camera, and it's got all the movements and everything that you could want, but not particularly heavy. It's better for a studio. I don't know that I've ever heard it perfectly reproduced, but attributed to Edward Weston. Anything more than so many feet from the road is just not photogenic.
There you go. Well,
as soon as I started with the 8x10, I understood that completely. So, yeah, I have the 8x10, and I use that not as much as the 4x5. Also, I have a Mamiya C330 with a handful of lenses for that. It's the twin-lens reflex camera. And I just picked up a Fuji 6x9 rangefinder that is nice because you get huge 6x9 negs out of it, but because it doesn't have the big prism in it, it doesn't weigh very much.
Aren't they great? Now, you have a 692 or a 3 or which one?
I have the 692.
Same as myself. Beautiful camera. It's great. And like you said, that's a big piece of film and a small camera.
It is.
Very close to pushing that 4x5 size. Not exactly, but it's still pretty good.
It is. It's nice and much more portable.
Yeah, I know a couple guys that actually do all of their professional work with that camera, and they shoot portraits and environmental stuff and landscape, and they use the Fuji with the 90 lens or the wide?
I have the 90. Yeah, and I picked this up used. It only had, if you believe the counter on the bottom, it only had 1,100 shutter trips on it. So,
wow.
It's almost new as far as I'm concerned.
It's very fresh.
Very fresh. And it looks cherry, too, so I'm inclined to believe the counter.
What do you like to shoot film-wise? I know that you're shooting some E6, and of course, the black and white. What do you like to do for color?
Color, I'm very fond of the Fuji series. Most of my outdoor stuff is, not surprisingly, Velvia, and I shoot the 50. I always liked the 50. I was depressed when they canceled it and had never run out of stock. But they brought it back. I was very happy about that. And I've been really surprised with Astia. Everyone talks about it as a portrait film, a people film, but when you have higher contrast scenes that Velvia would not be as good for, I found Astia just wonderful as a landscape film. So I'm stocking up in quick loads on both of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so sad about quick loads.
Well, that's what I wanted to get into next, is let's talk about the quick load scenario here real quick. Fuji has discontinued all quick loads.
Correct.
And I'm assuming you've played with shooting traditional sheet film.
Yes. And what basically my approach is, I keep my film holders full of Delta 100 in black and white, and I keep a box of Velvia and a box of Astia in my bag for quick loads, and so I can shoot whatever I want, pretty much as much of what I want. And the convenience is just unparalleled. Just pull it out of the envelope, stick it in, and run. And you don't have to have as much planning. You can respond to the scene much better when you don't have to say, well, I'm out of that. I don't generally carry a dark bag around to empty film holders out in the woods. I could always resort to that if I had to, but that's not really my plan. So quick loads were just wonderful. And I have not nearly enough boxes of them in my freezer, but I'm working on that.
Yeah, well, it's still out there, and I don't think that it's dried up yet. So it's just a matter of how much dough you want to spend on putting film in the freezer.
Yeah, if I recall their press release correctly, they said they were going to make it through April, and that they had anticipated their stocks to last through the end of 2010.
Right, but every time you hear that, though, you want to just start buying as quick as you can.
I just spent like $300 on partially stocking a freezer because I was getting jittery.
And typically, how much film do you go through in a quick load scenario a year?
In a year, probably 60 or 70 shots.
Oh, so if you hook up a nice little freezer stash, it'll keep you busy for a while.
Right.
I'm still finding a good deal on, even ready loads are still out there in Chrome. EV100, economically priced.
So, yeah, that may be a decision process. Well, ready loads, though, I thought those were also discontinued.
Oh, they've been discontinued for a couple of years.
Okay.
Actually, the last batch of Kodak EV100 I've seen in ready load, I think just expired in like December of 09. So if it's been in cold storage, it's still mighty tasty. Yeah. Yeah, that is a bummer, but I guess you got to think about it as a business, and people get all freaked out because they discontinue film. But, well, I mean, at a certain point, the bean counters are going to just cut your legs off at the base, and that's where you go. So people don't buy it.
As long as they make it, I'll buy it and shoot it. I mean, when I have to go back to regular old film holders, then I will. I mean, you don't really have any choice.
But we can always get the old Graflex automatic sheet folder that holds, what, 7 or 8 shots?
Mm-hmm.
That will help on the 4x5 front.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, the 8x10, you're hosed anyway, so.
Yeah. That 8x10 is great, though. It makes 4x5 look fast.
Yep. But it's beautiful stuff, especially doing portraits.
Yeah. It is. That's kind of a side thing for me. I tend to experiment with portraits mostly with people that I know.
Do you like shooting people better than shooting landscape, or do you find that you're drawn to outdoors, nature stuff more?
I really like shooting landscape. What's also nice about it is that it doesn't move. So when you get it set up, it pretty much stays that way, shy of an act of God. So I really like landscapes. People are fun, and it's a very unique challenge. I think that the portrait work that I'm most pleased with is with people that I have a rapport. And so I'm very impressed with the portrait photographers who can, having met the client once or twice, get really personal feelings in the portraits. I can't do that. I need to sit with my daughter or my friends or my son and people that I know very well, that I'm able to get that emotion to come out. So I'm really jealous of people who can do that or make it look easy.
Yeah, it's not as easy as it looks, as you all know.
No, not to do it well.
So let's talk about black and white. What do you like to shoot in black and white?
Big fan of Delta.
Yeah?
Delta 100. And when I need something faster, like in the 6x9, I'll go with Delta 400. A lot of people, when they start up with black and white, they'll try every developer under the sun. I experimented a little bit with some Rodinal that I got. Was a mix-it-up-yourself kind of thing. I had an awful experience with it. I think maybe I messed up the chemistry, which is kind of terrible, since that's more close to what I actually do during the day. Ilford said, gosh, DDX is a really great developer for this stuff, and so I played with it and I liked it, and I just kind of stuck with it. The liquid developer is wonderful because I don't have to mix up a gallon at a time or anything, and I just use what I need and dump it when I'm done. You can get great shadow detail and lots of contrast control with the developer, and I've just been very pleased with it.
Now, do you typically develop your stuff manually? Do you use a Jobo? What are you doing with the development?
I do tray development in my darkroom, and I actually just did 5 sheets this morning. 6 is about the limit of what I'll do in a batch. For 120, a couple of generic spools. I got it from B&H somewhere.
Yeah, that's one thing nice being on the East Coast, that you can get to B&H pretty easily.
Yeah, I need to visit them someday. What's nice is I work in the greater Boston area for the day job, and it's pretty much overnight shipping from New York City, so you get it pretty quick.
Nice.
And they stock 8x10 film, which 8x10 sheet film is expensive to begin with, and when it's not a special order, then you can get it for something that is close to reasonable to shoot.
So true. So let's chat about your printmaking here. Are you doing all your own black and white in-house and shipping the color out to your lab? How's that working?
Yes. What's funny is I got an interesting relationship with this lab. I was getting some E6 developed, and I was interested in starting my own black and white stuff. And the guy who runs the lab, he said, well, have you bought an enlarger yet? And I said, well, no, I haven't. And he said, come with me. And he takes me in the back room, and he shows me their black and white darkroom. And he shows me the Omega 4x5 enlarger. And then he walks me over to the Bessler 4x5 enlarger, and he shows me all the negative carriers. I got a couple of Negatrans, both in 120 and 35, and all the lenses and all the paper. And he says, how about $500 for all of this?
Wow.
I mean, basically, I stole it. So I now have all of Dorian's black and white darkroom in my darkroom, which is not big enough to hold it, so I have a downstairs bedroom with one enlarger in it that I have yet to sell. And the enlargers both have Ilford's multi-grade exposure system, so it's almost like cheating. You just have a keypad to dial in contrast, so it has basically a green light and a purple light that it mixes together in a light mixing box. You want lower contrast, it dials in more green. Higher contrast, it dials in more purple. Basically, you don't have to change the exposure when you change the contrast, which is what you'd have to do with the filters. So I've got those setups, and yeah, I make all my own prints. I mean, I've printed up to 16x20s. I've never printed anything larger because the darkroom's a little on the small side. And when you start getting to 20x24 trays, I don't have the room for it right now. But color stuff, I mean, I basically do the slide scans at home. And I will just upload the uncompressed TIFF images to their FTP server. And then they'll make some proofs for me. I come down, check them out. When I'm happy with them, then they go off for printing and whatever else I might have done to them. The Dartmouth work, they wanted it mounted. It was a block mount style onto medium-density fiberboard. So it's this 3/8 medium-density fiberboard with a laminate over the print, and the edges are painted black. I found a couple people that could do that, and it's just pay for service. I don't get to do any of the work, which is unfortunate, but I can't do any of that work, which is nice to not have to.
That is very cool to be able to have that kind of option and flexibility, yeah. And your client pays for it, so you can't complain about that.
Right. No, that's exactly right, and they've been very happy with that work. After this last job, I gave them a couple of very nice print boxes full of 8x10 sized versions of all of the prints that they had made for the Buchanan Hall job. Basically, what I gave them was something to remember the job by, and they were thrilled with it, and I guess they made a collage on the wall with all their work, so their clients can come in and see their work, and also mine.
So, Michael, what are you looking forward to moving forward with your photography? What are you looking to do that you haven't got to do yet? Is there something that you want to shoot, any kind of special projects? What are you working on now? What are you looking forward to currently that you want to do?
I picked up a zero-image 4x5 pinhole a year or two ago, but I haven't got to shoot nearly as much as I want to. And same with the 8x10. So I'd kind of like to get to some more pinhole stuff, because we don't even have a lens here. It's very, very fundamental types of stuff, and I find that to be just personally interesting. A lot of the work that I do right now is still the New England town forest types of conservation land. I kind of found an attraction to the trails themselves, and I found that they're very difficult to shoot. So I thought that was a very good challenge for me to figure out how to shoot paths and trails, because you have to make it stand out in the print. It's very easy to see it with your eye, but in the print, sometimes it doesn't stick out so well. And that's attracted me to some of the footbridges and paths and things like that. And given some of the clients that I tend to work with, I think that those bridges to the future and paths to success might come out in commercial work. But it's an interesting challenge for me to try to make it work. And it's a little bit unusual in terms of when I'm out with other photographers at the same place. They're usually not shooting anything close to what I'm shooting, which I like. A little bit of differentiation in the product.
What are you looking forward to doing moving forward? What's your goal here? To shoot something that you haven't shot before? Go somewhere? Is there something that you really want to do that you haven't got to do yet?
That's a good question. I don't do nearly enough 8x10. We talked a little bit about portrait work earlier, and I would love to be able to do more of that. It requires a lot of learning on my part, just the interaction with other people. When I bought the 8x10, I was thinking about combinations of 8x10 landscape work, and also trying to do 8x10 portraits. It's very difficult to make that great big camera kind of disappear. That's something I'd like to be able to do and work on that with people that perhaps I'm not either friends with or related to.
I mean, that's a great challenge to be able to do these kinds of portraits and to be able to try to connect with people that you're not very familiar with and pull it off.
I had been playing with some of the liquid emulsions, liquid light, for example, using watercolor paper to do that. And I was thinking about trying to get basically an antique-y type of style, because the liquid light gives you kind of a low contrast, sort of like the old tintypes and things like that, to try to get that antique kind of feel in a portrait using 8x10 and doing contact prints. And I'm not sure if liquid light or just regular paper is the way to go. And every now and again, I get an idea that I might try to do calotypes or something like that. But I haven't got set up with a nice UV exposure system. So any of the alt process stuff, that's something I would really love to do, would be more of the alt process printing. Palladium, platinum, that kind of stuff is really interesting. And with an 8x10, you can make reasonable sized prints. But what I need to do is do some work into getting some UV sources, because none of those techniques use regular light bulbs. You have to get something with a good ultraviolet part of the spectrum. And so maybe that's something that I'd really like to get into.
Any thoughts on having any of your work published, putting together some books? There's lots of ways now that photographers can make some nice coffee table books of their own work, even for their own personal use. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I've thought about it. My neighbor's brother is a big art photographer in New York City. And I was chatting with him about making books and things like that because he showed me some of his. He had some very good experiences with using some of the Apple products to make books. And their color reproduction was very good, and the prices are certainly right. It's interesting. I don't know that I've got a project that I'm ready to put my own book together on just yet, but that has certainly been in the back of my mind for a while. The prices are fantastic. You couldn't make books like this 5 years ago, I don't think.
Well, no, and especially with Apple's thing, you can just drop your college install into iPhoto and make a book that's stunning for 30
that's
bucks.
Right. That's right.
It is pretty cool stuff.
That's right.
So, Michael, let's talk about your website, your blog. They can go look at your beautiful photography, the images that you're doing, prints, what you're up to. Where do they find out all this great information?
Well, my website is www.michaelcostolo.com. I'll spell it. MichaelCostolo.com. Everything pretty much is linked from the front page there. So I have a blog that I'm trying to basically kind of pull sort of my favorite images that's more recent to talk a little bit about it. I was paying more close attention to that, except for the last few months has been really busy here at work, so I haven't been focusing on that as much as I should. But that basically has a breakdown of some of the work that I have out there and the images that are available. Every job is different, and so I don't really have prices on what this image costs for whatever, because most of my clients really come to me with their requirements, and then I work out best price I can to get them what they need.
Yeah, this is beautiful photography, great work. I do appreciate you taking time out of your day to chat with us, to talk about your nature and your landscape photography and all this beautiful work you're doing, Michael. This is very cool.
Oh, well, I appreciate the call.
And definitely great to see you shooting all of this beautiful photography on film. So cool to see that you're continuing the traditional analog process. And like I said, beautiful work, buddy.
Very pleased to do it. Thank you for the comments.
Well, there you go. Michael Costolo, great guy, beautiful photography. You definitely want to check out his work. He has the most beautiful nature photography you're going to see anywhere, landscapes, just a lot of great stuff going on. Check his website out, www.michaelcostolo.com. That's MichaelCostolo.com. The Inside Analog Photo Radio program has been brought to you by Fujifilm for their full line of instant cameras and film, and of course, fine quality Fuji Crystal Archive paper over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional. Our friends at Photo Publicist, worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the finest quality lab in the country, richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5 for black and white chrome at dr5.com. Upstrap for the finest quality camera strap that will not slide off your shoulder at upstrap-pro.com. Our friends over at Iger Studios at igerstudios.com. And of course, our media partners of the Analog Photography User Group at apug.org and our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House over at eastmanhouse.org. I've been your host, Scott Shepard, here on Inside Analog Photo. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.